Recently, I read something in the media of someone talking about their meditation, and they described liking a certain kind of around-the-ear headphones because they have two dogs and a fairly noisy house, so I put the headphones on when I'm trying to meditate. And then they use a special kind of timer. In a way, no problem using that. Something to drown out noise, dogs, all sorts of so-called disturbances. That's a kind of practice, a kind of sitting, and yet that's not quite our practice. Some of you might be familiar that Harada Roshi and then Yasutani Roshi after him describes five different kinds of zazen, and in a way that kind of zazen of trying to avoid all sorts of things, to avoid noise and so forth, is one of the kinds of ordinary zazen. But, and even more, I would say it's fine to do as long as one needs it. Just like when one has a broken leg, you need to have a cast put on it so it can heal, because it doesn't heal well otherwise. You need maybe a cane or two canes if you're going to do any walking, because you can't, for the time being, can't do anything else. So you need those exterior supports. But that's very limited. It's the kind that tries to create conditions externally in order to then create conditions internally. That will enable you to be in a certain state, a certain way, a certain condition, and that condition becomes what you identify with as correct meditation, or correct, and you fill in. That will create tranquility or calm through the controlling of outside conditions and maybe the controlling of inside conditions. That's not quite our practice. That would be like saying, well, we have to make sure there are no cars going by outside on Prospect or Green in order to have zazen. Well, someone will say, well, move out to the country, you won't have that problem. And then you're out in the country and you have problems with the crickets and the birds and the insects and who knows what else. I remember once we did an outside, not outside, we did zazen near a field, a pasture with cows in it. And in this style, occasionally we would do mooing as part of the practice. You know, there's a koan moo, so we would do moo out loud. Some of you who've been to San Diego or even Los Angeles would know that that's sometimes that was done there. We would moo together for a little bit in other places as well. So we started mooing, and at a certain point, this whole Zendo's out loud mooing, and the cows started mooing along. But, well, that's an interesting event. That's not our practice, controlling outside inside conditions. And yet, so Dogen Zenji in Fukan Zazengi talks about instruction for Zazen. So once you've regulated your posture, take a breath, exhale fully, swing to the left and right. Then, of course, this is an English translation. Sit solidly like a rock. Think not thinking. Fu shiryo. How? Think not thinking. Non-thinking. This is the essential art of sitting zazen, or actually the essential art of zazen. It doesn't say sitting zazen. In a way that can be translated as sitting meditation. Zazen is not the practice of dhyana, it's just the Dharma gate of ease and joy. It is the practice attesting of final bodhi. Manifest realization of koan is not something that comes within reach of words and concepts or nets and snares. So let's look a little more at what that Dogen is talking about. Of course, Dogen, using this phrase, think not thinking or non-thinking, is actually quoting from a Chinese master. And in another fascicle of Shobo Genzo, what I just read was from Fukan Zazengi, and in another fascicle of Shobo Genzo titled Zazen Shin, he gives a longer exposition and in a way helps clarify this, because this is important. Clarifying what is this Zazen? What is this Zazen Shin? Literally means the acupuncture needle of Zazen. Zazen Shin. Shin is the point, the needle that presses the point of the fundamental matter, if we say it that way. Once great teacher Yuao Shin Shan Wangtao, Yakusan was his name in Sino-Japanese, sitting zazening, if I say it that way, and monk asked, what are you thinking in that resolute state? The teacher replied, thinking not thinking. The monastic asked, how do you think not thinking? This translation says, how do you think through not thinking? The literal phrase is fu shiryo, think not thinking, but we'll work with that. Teacher replied, non-thinking. So Dogen's comments on this, or addition to this, so that's the Chinese case, and Dogen talks about realizing such utterances of the great teachers, we should study resolute sitting and transmit it correctly, which means thorough investigation of resolute sitting handed down in the Buddha way. Remember, what did Dogen say in the translation that I used from Fukan Zazengi? sit solidly like a rock. What does that mean? So, resolute sitting, another word we're, although he is not the only person taught thinking in the resolute state, Yuashan's utterances are the very best because of thinking, not thinking. Thus, thinking is the skin, flesh, bones, marrow of Zazen. Not thinking is the skin, flesh, bones, marrow of Zazen. Monastic asked, how do you think not thinking, or think through not thinking? And in a way, this question is not quite accurate description of what the text, the original Chinese text is, or Japanese text is. But it's putting it into English. And the problem is, when we put this into English, it adds on subject-object, which is exactly the problem in the case I talked about where someone puts earphones, headphones, over their head. It treats think, not thinking, as something you do, whereas in a way it would be better to hear the question is, how is think, not thinking? What is think, not thinking? How think, not thinking? Although not thinking is indeed time-honored, refreshingly is how think, can there be no thinking in the resolute sitting? How can you fail to understand the resolute state and beyond? The great Dogen quotes Yakusan saying, non-thinking, in his comment then, the use of non-thinking is unmistakable. And yet, to think, not thinking, we always exert non-thinking. There is someone in non-thinking, and this someone sustains Zazen, sustains the one sitting Zazen, sustains us in Zazen. Although it is oneself who sits resolutely, this sitting is not merely thinking, but exerts itself as resolute sitting. Resolute sitting sits resolutely, or to use a phrase I've used, Zazen sits Zazen. How could this resolute state think of itself as an object? In other words, treat the sitting as an object, as something separate from ourself. See, turning ourself into a subject, I'm sitting Zazen, which is what we're doing when we put headphones over, when we separate ourselves and judge conditions, whether inside or outside, as part of our Zazen. For these reasons, Dogen says, the resolute state of sitting is neither the measure of the Buddha, nor the measure of the Dharma, neither the measure of awakening, nor the measure of comprehension. See, in a way you could say non-thinking goes beyond these either or of thinking and not thinking. in a way, if we use such words, you could say it transcends them, but in a way that's bad, because then it makes us think that it's somewhere else, something more abstract. It's nothing of the sort. See? We need to be clear that thinking isn't a thing that we do. And Dogen wants us to be clear on this. This isn't just a modern problem. Further on in this very same fascicle of Shobo Genzo, Dogen talks about the various forms of our life. And he says, thinking itself, knowing. Thinking is itself knowing, without any dependence whatsoever. Its knowing has its form. So what's the form of knowing, of thinking, as far as Dogen says? It is the mountains and rivers. These mountains and rivers are subtle, and this subtlety is wondrous. When we put use to it, it is lively and spirited. To put this single knowing of, if I add the word resolute sitting, or sitting solidly like a rock, to put this single knowing even to the slightest use, we exert mountains and rivers of the entire world and know them with our utmost. Without intimacy between our knowing and the mountains and rivers, not a single knowing or a half understanding on our part will be possible. This is what's important to hear from Dogen, so that we can begin to be clear that our Zazen is not a subject-object process. It's fine that when it has to be that way because of our agitation, because of conditions inside, outside, fine. Then we do that then because of, treat it as a medicine for the circumstances. And yet, that is in, if I use the word, the container of the sitting solid like a rock. See, then it's not an issue of am I calm or am I not calm, or am I tranquil or am I agitated. Those sorts of labels become a way to judge both our Zazen and our life. And they result in a life where we miss who we truly are, because we are carrying around our life as an object of this somewhere subject called ourself. And to truly live our life is to allow be this resolute solid mountains and rivers that are our life. See, so that's why I have this problem, so to speak, if we see our meditation as something that we need to protect ourselves from by headphones or any other kind of way. when we breathe, our breathing is the moon and sun breathing. It's not I am breathing. Of course, when it's I am breathing, that's fine. I is nothing but the sun and the moon. Otherwise, we live in a world of all sorts of potential grievances about this and that, and sensitivities more or less about all sorts of conditions. And if you extend it endlessly, you can become constantly concerned about aggressions and microaggressions and spaces that are okay and spaces that are not okay, which is what we're doing when we're putting headphones on. We're saying, well, this space isn't quite an okay space for my meditation. We are, if I say it a different way, is perpetuating all sorts of illusions about self. And when we perpetuate illusions about self, we perpetuate illusions about other, about conditions. See, our Zazen is this solid resoluteness of this whole universe that sits Zazen with us. That's non-thinking. It's not something magical. It's not something distant. It's the Dharma gate of ease and joy. Ease and joy isn't a condition that we then judge more or less different than pain, agitation, outside noise, inside noise, things that I don't want, things that I do want. What is it to be sustained by the non-thinking that we are? Then this sustains us sitting, being Zazen. Resolute sitting sits resolutely. Or Zazen, Zazen's Zazen. Because resolute sitting sits resolutely, how could this resolute state think of itself as object? See, Dogen says it very clearly. Or, if we put it a different way, when we discover ourself sitting, treating our sitting, treating our life as an object, right there we know there's practice effort called for because of the wound of treating our life as an object. Treating this no birth, no death life as gain and loss, as better and worse. So this is what Dogen is talking about, that we are all able to do, and that's the simple instruction for us for sitting. Now, no problem with using headphones to take care of noise when that's needed. Fine. But that's just to enable us to finally embrace the noise when that arises, to embrace the pain when that arises, to embrace the fear when that arises, or whatever condition and state arises. See? Because it's not a matter of our thinking about I like this state, or feeling about, or believing about I like this state or I don't like this state, or I've achieved the good state or the appropriate state. See? It's the state of the forms of the mountains and rivers. It's, as Dogen says, lively and spirited, or ease and joy. Okay. I know some of this you might think, oh, what's he starting with that stuff with Dogen? That gives me a headache. But there's a point in this, because the point is to see that if you want, that there's different kinds of practice that we could engage in, and that some of it is fine as a temporary medicine when it's needed, but that fundamentally our practice is the practice of non-thinking, the practice of the mountains, the traffic noise, the road, the sky, and the sun and the moon. Okay, so I will stop here and we can clarify this a bit further so that our illusions, we can let them float off into the sky. Then we can truly be the sky, be the resolute life that we are. If you need to change your position, please do. Yes, Munshin.
Is, oh, I like this, apart from rivers and mountains?
Nope.
Or it's too noisy, rivers and mountains.
Streams make lots of noise running over rocks, don't they?
Sure.
So we've got the river of cars outside this endo that joins us and that we join in our zazen. And we have rivers of babbling inside our heads, so to speak. Babbling emotions, neither good nor bad. They're just sometimes one way, sometimes another. Yet, if we treat it as I am trying to think this way or that way or do this with them or do that with them, then we're still in the zazen of fixing and patching up and creating a certain kind of state of being, state of mind, state of body. That's not, I mean, it's fine. People do that and it's useful at some points. In fact, sometimes it's necessary because of our physical, mental condition or that of others. But that's still a subject-object type of approach, and it's a treating zazen as a means, and that isn't the zazen that Dogen, that Yueshan is speaking of. That's not the zazen that we're talking about. That's not the Dharma gate of ease and joy. As Dogen says, to put this single knowing to the slightest use, we exert mountains and rivers of the entire world and know them with our utmost. Without intimacy between our knowing and mountains, rivers, not a single knowing or a half understanding on our part will be possible. We're talking about the intimacy between our, I don't know if you even see, the problem is as soon as you use English, you're in a subject-object world. You're in a world that differentiates mental and physical and other kinds of functions. Of course it exists in Chinese, in Japanese. They have similar language problems. It's just they have their own particular ones. But because most of us speak English as a first or second language, or speak a similar language with similar grammatical constructions, we tend to view the world, we tend to view ourselves, we tend to view others through the rules and the lenses of those languages, and then we get trapped by those languages if we believe them. There's no problem using those languages. Dogen uses language, we use language. Languages are just another functioning of being human. But if we get trapped by it, then we want to turn the whole universe into the rules of those language. And we turn ourself into the rules of those language without knowing that. Then our ability to, if I use the word to know, becomes constricted by the rules of those language. If I say it in a different way, and please, the musicians here, please excuse me for speaking about something I know nothing about, but you know, Western musical systems and music tends to have a certain rules about tonality and other things and scales, and if you then listen to music from other cultures that have different rules, you have all sorts of, there's a potential for problems in terms with different scales and different rules. And then when you have people who do things like, again, I'm ashamed, there's the 12, I think it's called 12 tonal systems of Schoenberg that try to break some of those other rules, and it becomes very difficult for those who want to keep it in their own rules. We tend, now this is just an analogy, let's not talk about music, I'm an illiterate there, excuse me for bringing it up, but as an analogy, we tend to do similar things with our own, not just our language, but our whole mental picture of self and other duality that we want to impose on our self. Not we want to, we habitually, without even thinking about it, without even being aware of it, impose both on our own life in all the multiple ways that humans function, and on other people and on the world, and then we get into trouble because of that. So okay, enough. I hopefully have answered some what you asked. So this is what Dogen is encouraging us to be zazen, that goes beyond the limits of this subject object that you want to impose on your functioning, both in the so-called physical and mental. Of course, there's no such two things, physical, mental, but yet we talk about it. We talk about the posture, we talk about sitting solidly or resolutely, and then we talk about thinking, not thinking, or non-thinking, or just sitting. Okay. Yes, Jojo.
When that, I'm not sure if there's a man or woman that's putting the headphones on or whatever, but to me it's sort of like when you extend that analogy out to just going out into the world, you know, driving a car, going to the store, the movies, whatever, keeping those headphones on, it's similar to that.
Well, yes and no. I mean, in a way, it's a woman and she's saying, you know, I because of my dogs and a noisy house and kids or whatever, actually not, her kids are grown, but noisy house, I find myself not capable of sitting or meditating because I distracted and disturbed by the conditions of the house. Now, saying that is fine. Then you use what you need to use, because you have to be skillful in seeing what you need. But if you begin to identify sitting or meditation as a certain state that's dependent upon both outside being a certain way or inside being a certain way, then you've turned sitting, you've turned meditation into a object of your subject and of your conditions and expectations. Then it just becomes another thing in your life that you do, and that further perpetuates self-centeredness, if I say it that way. It further perpetuates what leads to harm and suffering.
Because you're trying to use that meditation for your own gain or goals or whatever.
That part is, yes, is true, but even more because you think meditation only exists when you have things set up in a certain way. Imagine if you said the only time I'm okay to be me is if my body feels this one way and it's got this strength and this health and this, but if anything else is different, then there's a problem, then my body's not my body, then there's, or my life is not my life, or the universe is not okay. See, that's what that sort of headphones meditation has the potential of us getting caught in. And if we have to do it that way all the time, then fine. It's just like for me to read this, most of the time I need to wear glasses. I can strain and read some things here, and I make an effort to print things with big print when I'm writing out stuff so that I can read better, but I recognize I need glasses. But if my whole functioning has to be through glasses, then essentially what it's about is about these eyes and me inside here looking through this glasses against these things outside here that are not me, and that I want to be a certain way. It's fine to use to read, but we need to know that if we need glasses to sit resolutely so that the conditions of the universe appear a certain way, then that's still perpetuating self-centeredness, because in the midst of ongoing change, the universe is constantly changing, and so is every function and faculty of our life. See, that's the very nature. If we want to go back to basic Buddhist teaching, ongoing change, impermanence, non-self. And if we try to make certain sets of conditions as this is self, and these other conditions are not self or not okay, and these conditions have to remain a certain way, then we're guaranteed to have lots of suffering. Because it doesn't work that way. Even if you're the wealthiest of wealthiest, there are still conditions you can't control. There's still circumstances that keep on changing. There's still this ongoing non-self of the universe that we are. One moment. So, Okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You talked about Doga mentioning streams and mountains.
Yeah.
But you didn't. Could you talk a little more about the mountains?
I have nothing to say more further. You don't need me to say anything about mountains. You just be a mountain. That's what Zazen is being mountains. Then there's nothing further to say. You become the expert. It's for knowing has its forms. It's mountains and rivers. So the form of the knowing of your Zazen is mountains and rivers. How could anyone tell you anything about it?
Well, you talked a lot about rivers.
Well, he says mountains and rivers.
I miss the mountains where I grew up.
Well, you know what? Actually, one of the things that one of the things that both for my own family and I've heard this from other people, one of the hardest things about living here in Champaign is there were no mountains. We moved here from the mountains of the California coastal range, and I know other people have said, someone else has told me that they have great difficulty with the fact that they no longer have mountains having moved to Champaign. But Dogen says, putting this, not knowing this non-thinking to the slightest use, we exert the mountains and rivers of the entire world and know them with our utmost. That's the intimacy between our knowing and mountains and rivers. So what more can I add to that?
I'll work on that one.
Yes. And nevertheless, when Dogen wanted to set up a monastery, he was in Kyoto for a while, and then conditions and circumstances made it clear that he wasn't going to be able to do it there. He went off into the deep mountains to set up his monastery and actually talked about the importance of sitting in the mountains, etc., etc. And there's quite a number of fascicles in Shobogenzo that talk about that, but we're not going to touch that. That's, you know, a venerable tradition in many traditions of going off into the mountains to practice. But wherever we are is the fine mountains. Don't worry about that. If you want, go to the mountains. You want, go to the prairie. They're all wonderful opportunities. All of them have the sun and the moon and the stars to sit with. See? So that's fine. Yes, Antonio.
I have a curiosity, but it's hard for me to even ask the question, so I'm just gonna, maybe you'll hear it in there. I'm curious about this thinking, non-thinking, and knowing. So what I'm puzzled about is that you said something about non-thinking, that we're not doing the thinking. Did you say that? I mean, I'm kind of confused here.
Well, see, if we treat thinking as a verb, and we treat the subject as I am thinking, not thinking, then we're still stuck in that subject verb object world, and there's a dualism there that really isn't, I mean, it's fine to speak that way, but Dogen, and not just Dogen, but Yakusan and all the ancestors and the Buddhas are always encouraging us to go beyond that, because that approach to our life still perpetuates the self-centeredness that creates and supports and nurtures suffering for us and for others.
Okay, I get that part. What about when the mind is just thinking on its own, mm-hmm. and you? Sometimes I feel like I'm not paying attention to the mind, and as it's going on about
right.
something, I'm with the traffic and the sensations in my body. So what is creating that?
It's just like when your mouth starts salivating when there's the smell of food. What's creating it? Nothing. That's just the universe of salivary glands and all the microbiota that's in your mouth that functions in response to the universe of smell, etc., etc. We attribute self to thought. We attribute subject to functions. And therefore, we tend to break ourselves up and separate ourselves. So that's exactly what Dogen tries to point to at various places.
So if you're not attached to what you're thinking, if you're just noticing every once in a while, oh, there's that, there, you know, sometimes I don't even know what I'm thinking,
uh-huh.
then that's just...
Well,
I don't know.
You don't try to
me making that up.
Yeah, in a sense, once we try to put language into it, then we either create some sort of idea that there's something else transcendent somewhere else, you know, or we start becoming conceptual. I mean, sometimes we talk about practice as being a bigger container. If you want to use, again, it's an analogy. The analogy of this bigger container in which thinking, feeling, and so forth arises within. Fine, it arises and it passes. Just as in our Zazen, even though it's, if I use that expression, we sit solidly here, yet we're a bigger container which can contain and allow all sorts of arising, passing as this solid sitting, whether it's so-called inside and thoughts and feelings arising as you're describing, or it's so-called outside in the car sounds and the light and color and birds and chill and rain pass. And so forth.
It's the attachment to it that suddenly becomes subject, object.
It's the attachment to it, it's believing it, it's reacting out of it.
Okay.
See, and it's not a matter of theory, but a matter of discovering it for ourselves and discovering that non-thinking is our functioning, is our resolute sitting, if I use that kind of word. In a way, that allows us not to perpetuate suffering from, as a result of, a cause of that mind chatter or emotion chatter or physical conditions chatter or fears chatter, or those born and dying conditions that we do or don't want, or to discover how we do that. So we need to begin, well, I won't say that enough. Yes,
the example that you gave about the person with the headphones on mm. to block out sounds
mm-hmm.
Seems I guess in some way obvious that that's not our practice, and yet when it's not a sound but mm-hmm. it's anger or
uh-huh.
fear arising, then I know that's my response, not wanting headphones, but then there's something else that happens there, either thinking more about that, trying to figure that out, something that's very different from just the simple experiencing of the bodily sensations of whatever that is.
It's not the headphones that are the problem, because headphones as a skillful means is fine when you need it. If you have to really concentrate on your breath because you feel so mentally, emotionally agitated or grief-stricken, then you just do that. It's a skillful means. It's a kind of medicine for the extreme disturbance and your inability to, if I'll say, be intimate with it as is, and your recognition of that, and you're saying, I need the support. I need to really just chant Namu Daya Bosa, because otherwise I'm just overwhelmed by this. I need to put on this raincoat because the storm is so extreme. I need to be bowing because I'm so angry at them. And if I don't do that, I'll just explode. And you could list other things one is going to do. So there's putting on headphones. If you know you're so agitated about all the noise going on in your house, fine. No problem. And anything and everything can be a skillful support if you use it that way. It's just that if it's always that way, then it turns the practice into self and other manipulation. Then we only go to try to create a certain condition. Oh, the condition of my body mind needs to be such and such, or the condition of other people needs to be such and such. Then we are perpetuating what will cause us harm and suffering, and cause harm and suffering to others. That's why it's a limited practice. It's fine. You know, if that's where you're at, fine, do that. I will support you. If you come to me, we will talk about how you can do it, and fine. And will also, as appropriate, want to encourage you to go beyond that limit if you get stuck there. And that's what Dogen wants us to go beyond that limit.
That's not going to happen with more thinking,
though. No. Well, it might for a while. You might need some thinking, which is why we're talking now.
Right. Yeah, but that's just
right. but if you're going to sit there and think about your yes.
Okay.
And thinking itself is non-thinking. Thinking itself is the mountains and rivers, because it's another one of the functionings of being human. No problem with thinking. Don't set up this idea: thinking is bad, not thinking is good, or any such things like that either. But it's Dogen talks of the thinking of mountains and rivers. Look, people can say, "Oh, words and phrases are the problem." But look, Dogen writes voluminous stuff, and not just Dogen. In the Zen tradition, we have books and books of collections of writings of ancestors. Despite the fact is that there's the expression of beyond words and letters, and yet there's endless words and letters, and yet it's beyond words and letters. So. I have no problems if anyone wants to use any of over-the-air headphones or other devices when they need them, meditation aids, this person talks about using a meditation timer app, so that,
which is fine,
so that their phone or whatever starts their sitting and ends their sitting. Actually, there is an app I know, which you get a what?
There's a couple of sites online.
Yes, that you could start your sitting in it, no problem. But that's something different than what we're saying. All sorts of supports. However, if we get trapped by the supports, then we are in trouble. If you get up from your zazen and you're back into your subject-object world, then there's potential for all sorts of difficulties if you get caught up in expectations and judgments and fears and all the other poisons that come from that. And when we do, that's our time to find the skillful headphones, so that we can, if I say it, allow our illusions to drift away and become transparent and no longer hinder and blind us, no longer create hopes that create suffering. Okay. Last question, if anyone has one. Yes?
So it occurs to me to ask why all these words and letters and phrases, I mean, it's endless. I mean, it's Tripitaka. Yeah, I mean, it's like volumes and all these books have been written, and I assume there'll be more books written in the future of people writing stuff, and it just, you know, just overwhelming.
What is the Diamond Sutra say? The Buddha says, do not say that the Buddha said a single word. Then we don't get trapped by the words and letters and books. Then we see it for what it is, just like we see our life for what it is. What is the, again, the Diamond Sutra at the end has a poem which I'll misquote, but something to the effect, like a flash of lightning, like a dewdrop, and like a mirage, thus should you consider it. Consider this my life. Then, no problems. Intimacy is clear and as rock solid as those. Just see, that's the knowing that Dogen talks about of mountains and rivers, intimacy. That's the knowing form of mountains and rivers. See? This subtle wondrousness. Good. Thank you.